One. All right, we are live here with a Schloss Rant. We got a special guest today, the one, the only, Alex Budish. Budish, how are you, man?
Schlossberg, I couldn't be better, man. It's tournament time. It's not a better feeling in the air, and ready to talk a little Arizona basketball with you.
I mean, the air down here in Philly today, I mean, I don't know if it was like this in New York, too. It's cold and blowing around, and there's flurries. We didn't get any accumulation. But this is March, like you said.
Not a better time to be around. You know, I just got back on the flight from Vegas yesterday. Was watching the Arizona Wildcats win the Pac-12 championship back-to-back in the tournament, which was nice. And then, yeah, getting
look
off
at that.
It was, yeah, you know, it brought the luck, as always. And then getting back to the East Coast, yeah, it was a little rough. It was definitely cold. A little snow flurries, nothing too bad. But, yeah, no accumulation, which was nice.
Yeah, it's always good when you don't have to be out there shoveling. So anyways, let's get into our beloved Arizona Wildcats. All right, so let's just get off right off the bat. Two seed, is this, are they appropriately seeded, underseeded, overseeded? What do you think?
I think that they proved that they should have been a two seed the whole last part of the season. I think that when you look at them, they have the talent to beat anybody in the country, but they also have the ability to lose games that probably this team last year wouldn't have lost. I think if you go back to the beginning of the year, we were picked to finish fourth, if I'm correct, in the conference, lost three NBA players, not a lot of faith in the team. And I think what Tommy Lloyd's done in his second year, obviously we've seen all the accolades and the records and all that, but what he's done with, I would say, one NBA player and a bunch of very good role players is staggering. It's really, really impressive. And I think that they were looked over for a little part of the year and maybe disrespected, but I would say a two seed seems pretty fair. I know we'll get into the bracket in a minute here, but I think that where they were seated, I think, is the disrespect that I feel. But overall, a two seed, I feel, was well represented for what they deserve.
I agree. The two seed is definitely where they should be because, like you said, they can lose to anyone. I mean, that, how do you lose to Washington State? That's not a serious, you know, contender. And obviously they didn't make the tournament. I didn't think they made the NIT. Maybe they're in the CBI for all I know, but I don't even get into checking, you know, those lower level tournaments. They lost to Utah. They lost to Stanford. The ASU loss, I mean, that buzzer beater was ridiculous. I was at, you know, my cousin's little kid's one-year-old birthday party. I snuck away to watch the end of that game. And I'm just like, that ball's going in. And the freaking shot went in. And it's just like, that's terrible to lose that game too at home. But that loss isn't looking as bad because ASU's in the tournament, even if they're in the first four.
Yep.
But you're right, because they can lose to anyone. They beat tons of tournament teams.
I think that I saw the stat that they were 12-2 against the field this year in tournament teams, which is, I would say, amongst probably the best of any record in the country, I would wager.
I think so. By winning percentage, they're 9-2 in those quad one games. I don't know when all these quadrants became such a big deal, but I guess that seems to be what they're going by. That's the best in the nation as far as winning percentage. There's teams in the Big 12 that have, you know, 17 wins, but they're playing all these other Big 12 teams all the time. I mean, just to get a little bit off Arizona, a team like West Virginia, they're a number 9 seed, and they were 7-11 in their conference. They weren't even on the bubble, and they were 4 games under .500 in their own conference.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows with all these quadrant games? But like you said, they can beat anyone at any time. They beat Tennessee. They beat Indiana. They even beat Texas A&M Corpus Christi, who's a 16 seed playing in the first four. They beat Creighton. They beat USC three times, Arizona State twice, UCLA twice. Yeah, you lose to ASU, you lose to UCLA. So those are probably the only two losses against the tournament teams.
Yep.
So they're appropriate. But I want to touch back on something you said. Tell me about what's wrong with the region that they're in.
You know, it was tough. I'm as you know, from our long history together, I'm a very reactionary type person. Like when I first saw that Sacramento popped up in that South region, I was like, this is us. And I was immediately floored because in my mind, I think Arizona, because like you say, it's the eye test, right? Yeah, they've lost some bad games, but they won the Maui Invitational. They proved that they can win three in a row. They won the Pac-12 tournament on back-to-back years. They've beaten very, very good teams. And I always say that better wins are more important than worse losses, because it's not like college football. You can have a bad loss and get over it because you're going to go 28-6 or whatever we went, 27-6.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, the issue that I had was, if you're really saying that Alabama is the best team overall, and you're trying to tell me now that Arizona, as the committee put it, was the third. I take it as the fourth overall two seed after beating UCLA twice in the regular in the season, including the Pac-12 tournament. You know, I know we lost the conference by four games, but they were undefeated in non-conference play. To me, it just seems like I would have thought, I was very sure we were going to end up in the Midwest. It just seems to me that they kind of said, this is, we don't think highly enough of the non-conference schedule, and the tournament obviously proved that it didn't mean anything. UCLA was going to end up in the West no matter what, and it seemed like we were almost going to be a three seed. I'm interested to see, because I always know that they say that they won't put your conference opponents together. They try not to put you in the same conference with.
Right.
But St. Mary's and Gonzaga are in the West. So if we would have lost to UCLA, would we have been the three in the West? That would have been very, very interesting to see what they would have done. Listen, overall, after I got over the rant of the imitation Schloss rant of being upset that we were in Alabama, I look at the region now and I say to myself, Arizona has, in my opinion, Zach Edey is a freak, obviously, at Purdue, but Arizona probably has the best front court combo when they're on their
game. You look at Ballo and you look at Tubelis. Yeah, they can stack big men. And I think that's what kind of separates Arizona, because Arizona, I think by 2-point percentage in the country, they're like shooting 57 and change on the season. Yeah, they're making a lot of their shots. And they're not relying on the three. I mean, you know this long enough that as soon as these shots start hitting the rim and they're not going in, live by the three, die by the three. Only 31% of U of A's points on the entire season come at the three-point line. Now, I just did a random Google because I had to have some comparison. I picked another Wildcat team, the Kentucky Wildcats, and they're at about over 33%. So, I mean, I'd have to go team by team to look at it, but I would think that that's pretty – low, considering, you know, how many threes all these teams take. So like you said, to feed the ball into the bigs, get Tabulis going off the dribble a little bit. Yeah, they've got a diversified enough offense where they're not going to be relying on one guy going cold, having their John Starks 2-for-17 moment, and
exactly, you
know, all of a sudden I'm out again.
No, because like you said, if their big advantages, they can get a lot of the other teams that don't have two solid 7-footers in foul trouble, as we did in the UCLA game in the Pac-12 championship. If you attack the rim, you're going to get fouls. Arizona has a knack of going away from that every once in a while, because I think that they have shooters that want to shoot. I can't blame them for that. If you have open threes, you take it. But the difference between this year's team and last year's team had a ton more talent. I mean, that's just not even a question. I mean, like, you've got Ben Mathurin, who's going to probably win Rookie of the Year, or arguably Rookie of the Year. You've got Dalen Terry, who was on a first-round pick, and you've got Koloko, who was one of the better overall rim protectors in the whole country. I think that these guys are now, dare I say, closer together. I think that there's a better cohesion in this team, and they play for each other a little more. And I think Tommy Lloyd's got another year of experience under his belt. We got to remember, this guy's only in his second year as a head coach.
Right. It's not last even like, year. Not even like he was down in a smaller school as a head coach. No, this is his second go around in the tournament.
Yeah. And last year we went up against a Houston seed that I think everyone can agree they were very underseeded, and we basically played them at home and they beat us. It's not the excuse. They beat us fair and square. This
beat us down physically. Let's get that real. Let's be real.
Yeah.
They beat us down physically. And I think that if that U of A team last year was the 2014 or 2015 U of A team, where you had guys like Stanley Johnson, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, there's no way they get pushed around by Houston. No. That team last year, they got absolutely pushed around. And I don't want to call them soft, but I think the influence of, you know, just the different styles, they're not comprised of 6'6", 6'7", 240-pound guys who, you know, granted, Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson haven't particularly made it in the NBA, but you can't deny that those guys had 100% NBA-ready bodies, even at 18, 19, 20 years old.
Absolutely. Now, this year is the bigger question mark, because we all know that Tubelis, frankly, disappeared in that Houston game. He was nowhere to be found. But he wasn't the focal point last year. It was Mathurin that was the focal point. So the question is, and he stepped up this year in the tournament, in the Pac-12 tournament, he was fantastic. Him and Ballo were fantastic. To me, I think I see a little bit of a different kind of fire in his eye. I'm very excited to see because I can pull it up right here, but just remembering our matchups, Princeton should be a win, obviously. Utah State did give San Diego State a game in that conference final, but again.
Well, they got to get by Missouri first. And I'm down on all, you know, this, the committee, you know, that picked the teams, they tried to show you how smart they are by putting in four Mountain West teams. I mean, like, come on.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's kind of,
and that's just one, like, you know, critique of the committee. Like, they're trying to tell us how good the Mountain West is by essentially saying the Pac-12 is just as good. Meanwhile, well, the Pac-12, we got two number two seeds between us and Gary Bruce's beloved UCLA Bruins.
That's right. They're trying to show you how good the Mountain West is because they know once UCLA, SC leave for the Big Ten, and Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah leave for the Big 12, they know that they're just going to absorb the Mountain West into the Pac-12 to save the conference is what they're going to try and do. So they're probably trying to say, oh, we can make this a nationally recognized conference. Regardless, even like Baylor as a three seed, I was originally like, ooh, kind of scared about that. But they're down lately. I think it really, as long as Arizona doesn't disappear, and I don't see a reason that they should, it should be an Alabama-Arizona Elite Eight. And you know, when you get to that point of the tournament, you're always going to have to play a good team. So it's like, all right, you just got to prove that you can beat anybody. Alabama hasn't really seen this year anybody with Arizona's length the same way that Arizona hasn't seen anybody with that kind of explosiveness in a guy like Brandon Miller and their offense.
Well, that's a lottery. That's a lottery top two, top three pick you're exactly looking at. And we're not going to touch on the off-the-court stuff because there's no point. We don't know anything more than anyone else knows. And that's just not what I want to get into. Because I'm, you know, I'm all basketball here, all football, whatever I'm talking about. So the one thing that I, you know, you mentioned Baylor. What do you think about UVA in the same bracket as U of A? Because they're a recent national champion, just like Baylor, you know, within the past handful of years.
I don't think you can ever disregard coaching experience in a tournament like this, obviously. I think that those guys can prove that they can get the best out of players because they're the coaches for a reason. I think, you know, Virginia could pull off that upset over Alabama. They're not the same team that they were at the beginning of the year. They got handled, I'm going to put in quotes, by that Duke team in the ACC final, but that Duke team is flying high right now. I don't see them as the national champion that some people are seeing, but I could see them making a deep run in this tournament. Virginia is a sneaky team.
Sneaky? I could tell you what every score of the game is going to be. They're going to grind things out and win 55-49. That's what Tony Bennett's been doing for years.
Maybe sneaky isn't the right word. Maybe they are a team that can surprise you. Maybe Alabama thinks that's going to go. It's obviously going to be a defensive slugfest, but they do have the ability to score. But they are a defensive team, obviously. That's what they're going to try and do. Alabama is just so run and gun. And that's what I like about it, because that's what Arizona is. And I'm going to tell you one thing, just going back to our Arizona team. I'm going to tell you who I think is going to be the most important player of the whole tournament for Arizona.
Hit me with it. We got
17-year-old Kylan Boswell.
Oh my God. I have to hear that this kid is 17. Like, it was cool the first two times, and it's just like they just go on and on. It's like, shut up already. Enough. Yeah. We get it. He's 17.
I think Kylan Boswell, from what I've seen of him, is going to be in the next year one of the best point guards in the country. He is, just look at where he was at the beginning of the year to where he is now, right? He got his, in the Maui Invitational, he got his little chance. He got his pocket picked on national TV, got embarrassed. Lloyd sat him down. Then he started integrating him a little bit more into the team every year. I thought that he, besides Tubelis, obviously, was the most important player for us in the Pac-12 conference tournament because Kerr is Kerr. He plays.
Well, he's the one guy that's hot and cold.
Yeah, he plays the villain well because he wants to be, but he can shoot you into a game. He can shoot you out of a game. But Boswell seems to be a consistent, solid, classic point guard. He's got good handles. He's got decent distribution, but he can hit a shot. And he was hitting some big shots in that game, in the final, as well as that semifinal against ASU. I think that, you know, his stats aren't going to be impressive like Kerr. Kerr can go for 17. Boswell might get you 8 points, couple rebounds, maybe 3 to 5 assists, but I feel like they're always very important. And in a day where I'm not sure where Kerr's health is where it needs to be, I don't know yet. You know, obviously we can talk about the left-handed free throw or the buckets here and there. I just love what I see out of this kid, and I think next year he should be the starter. Because I think he's got a lot to prove. And I think that, you know, we joke about the age. But to reclassify at that age and be ready to play on a national spotlight is an impressive thing. So I love what I see out of that kid. Listen, we say it every year. The thing that I love about Arizona is that most people aren't picking us this year, which I like.
Oh my goodness. They are the least trendy, least talked about, number two seed. I mean, maybe ever. You're right. No one's talking about. I mean, they were heavily picked back in 2018 with DeAndre Ayton as a five seed, and they got punked by Buffalo in the first round and ran them out of the gym.
100 grand to lose in the first round, you know, an NIL deal now that'd be a steal money, but back then that was a bad deal. I see a couple people here and there picking them for a Final Four, some people picking them for a national champion. Obviously, I'm going to pick them to win the national title because I
Yeah,
can.
you got. I have to pick them. I'm only in one bracket thing. I'm picking them. Recently, I picked them every year because I'm not going to go against them. Like, I'm rooting for U of A. I got U of A involved in something else I got going with them, the Denver Nuggets, and my beloved New Jersey Devils. Little, you know, parlay there. I mean, if that happens, because I couldn't throw the Knicks in that because even though
Oh,
they're doing
come
well,
on.
but no, I couldn't throw your Lakers in there because let's be real, LeBron will come back and he'll get
Hey,
injured, but.
Melo's looking good too since he came over to the Lakers. I like him to play. But no, seriously, like I agree with you wholeheartedly because this team doesn't need added pressure. They just need to play basketball. And I think that when they just play their game, they're phenomenal. I think UCLA could have made a deep run in this tournament if they had Jalen Clark, and I don't know how Bona is, their center. That Gonzaga game is going to be tough, but I think Bill Self is going to come back for Kansas, and I think they're going to run through that bracket anyway, that side of the bracket anyway. I do see Purdue falling early-ish. I don't know. I don't think that they have the, maybe they don't have the mental strength to get through it. I think. And then obviously, I think, you know, Houston, they're basically playing at home the whole tournament. So there's really no excuse for them to
Right,
not get there.
especially if they can get to the Final Four. And I don't think Sampson's ever been to a Final Four as a coach. I don't think he was ever there with OU. I don't believe he was there with IU. So that would be something for him. But to get back to Arizona here real quick, because that's really what anyone cares about. I've said this before with Miller. I've said it with Lloyd. You've won Pac-12 tournaments. You've won Power Five games in season. You've been Pac-12 regular season champs. You got to get to a Final Four, and there's no better time to do it than now. I know we both said we're going to pick them to win the national title, and we're homers. We're diehards with this team. But is this Final Four or bust? Is anything else going to be unsatisfactory?
I go back to last year. We were picked to not even make the tournament. We were picked to finish like eighth in the conference. We got to the number one seed. At that point, you're saying to yourself, you got to make it this year. This team is a team of destiny, blah, blah, blah. They got beat by a better team on the night and a more physical team. This year, same thing, kind of the same kind of feel. Picked to finish fourth, probably, you know, you're seventh at the beginning of the year, 17th or 18th, if I remember correctly. You're probably thinking to yourself, five seed-ish. Let's see what we can do. And then I see this team play and I see how they play for Lloyd. And it feels different than any team that we had when we were
They
there
love
that
that coach. I
I
don't
love
feel
him.
like the past teams, I don't feel like they loved Miller. I don't know. Maybe
No.
just maybe we're
No, I
being
think it was
nitpicky
more
here.
of like a ruled with an iron fist. Whereas Lloyd,
Right.
my criticism for Lloyd is sometimes I feel like he lets them play on too long, take a timeout, make a sub. Like, I guarantee you, in three more seasons, when Kerr gets a technical foul, which was he have like six this year, he doesn't keep him in. He probably sits him down for a few plays and get your head right. Like, I don't mind players trying to get in the head of the opponent or the fans, but you got to know if it's going to cost you in big games. That's
Right.
my liability with Kerr, where I
Well,
don't see
I
it
think the
going.
refs in a tournament like this, they're gonna let a little more go
Sure.
for the
Also, like,
technical
I'm just
fouls.
going back to ridiculous Pac-12 calls. The offensive foul they called on Amari Bailey and that dunk was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Even
It's
Lloyd was
like,
surprised about that, I know.
I was
And
sitting
getting
with
back to
all
that,
UCLA. They love it.
Pac-12 title game, I thought that was impressive that U of A was able to win in a low scoring game because it just goes to show you that they can match up with different styles. And maybe if they're playing, a team like Houston last year, who's more physical, or if they're playing, UVA this year, if it's four versus two, it should have been, one versus two in the Elite Eight, they can play different styles, grind it out, and win the basketball games. I want to pick your brain on a couple more things before we end this conversation here on the Schloss Brand. We touched on this earlier about UCLA and USC leaving. Are you as upset as I am with UCLA and USC for basically disbanding a conference that me, you, and our buddy Bill Walton love?
Am I upset? Yes, I was really upset at the beginning because I think we can all agree that obviously Arizona State's our biggest rival, but not in basketball. UCLA is our biggest rival because of the two best West Coast teams of all time. That's what you want in your tournament in the battle for the West Coast. They did kill the conference because there's no way this conference can sustain the way it is anymore. I'm more upset with the Pac-12 itself, that there were deals to be made on the table and they wouldn't do it. I can't blame USC and UCLA for wanting to go get $100 million a year when they weren't going to get anywhere close to that in the Pac-12. The same way that I would say to Arizona, you got to get your money. Go to the Big 12. Go make 50, 60 million, 70 million a year.
All right, so here's the deal. After you just phrased it the way that you did so eloquently and so beautifully, I'm kind of on your side now. I was going to come here and erupt and just say how upset I was with them and USC because they're destroying the conference we love. Like we're Pac, even though we're both now on the East Coast, we are Pac-12 guys.
I grew up in Los Angeles. I was raised a UCLA.
Even more so with you.
Yeah, so I appreciate the rivalry between the two. And I said to my dad, who is a big UCLA donor and all that stuff, and I said, well, how do you feel? He goes, well, from a personal aspect, I'm really sad because I love this conference. I love the rivalry. But I can't be mad that the school that I support is going to go make 100, is like going to make 10 times money that they're going to make. You know what I mean? So, yes, I am upset that it had to come to this, but I would blame the Pac-12 for not getting a deal done.
They've been horribly run for years. I mean,
oh no, it's done. Yeah, no, and there's just no sustainability because the Big 12 would be stupid to not grab the four corner schools because the Arizona will make you decent money, and then Utah and Colorado is a no-brainer for travel.
I'm excited, honestly, though, to be in the Big 12 when it comes to that because, as you know, my dad's an alum of Oklahoma State University. So to have a little family rivalry going within the same conference will be nice. And as long as I'm going to be based back here on the East Coast, I can get some games on a little bit earlier. So I'm not staying. I got a 5:05 alarm every single day. And I'll be honest, I didn't watch the USC regular season game. I didn't watch the USC Pac-12 tournament game. I'm not staying up and getting 2.5 hours of sleep. So I'm not as dialed in as some other people.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. And then even I get a shot, maybe, you know, if they're playing out West Virginia, that's a doable drive from Philadelphia. Maybe not so much from New York because you gotta get through, you know, Jersey and into Pennsylvania, but I'm already in Pennsylvania. It's a straight shot. You'd have to figure if I can get to Pittsburgh in 5, another 2 hours to West Virginia. Maybe it's a football game, stay overnight, go back the next day. Or same thing with a basketball game. So at least maybe now I can see, you know, one game a year in person. It's on the table. I'm not saying I'm going to be running to do this, but it's definitely on the table.
I mean, the bottom line is that, yeah, I think that if UCLA and Arizona are smart, which they are smart schools, they'll schedule a non-conference home and home.
Right. Because U of A, even, you know, you go back even with Lute Olson, especially with Lute Olson, he's the one who started this. They'll schedule anyone, anywhere, anytime. They'll go to their gym. They're not like teams like Duke that are scared to come on campus. And I know U of A is playing Duke in a home starting this year, but with Krzyzewski, you know, they weren't running onto Arizona's campus to play in a regular season. They played in 2013 at MSG, but they weren't running to do home and homes.
No, but plus you're going to want to win the West, right? Because now if you're going to be competing in the Big 12, Kansas, Baylor, Texas Tech, all these schools or whatever, they're going to be competing for the Midwest, whereas Arizona probably wants the West. You're going to need to schedule the UCLAs, the Gonzagas, the USCs, because you need to prove that you can beat the West. That way, when you get a one seed or a two seed, you're in the West.
Right. That is true. Other thing I want to talk about, and this is getting slightly off the beaten path, but sticking with the college basketball. So on Sunday, you'll never guess where I was, and I didn't tell you about this before we jumped on. I was at the Atlantic 10 final at the Barclays Center. Zero affiliation with VCU, zero affiliation with Dayton. But I bring this up because Dayton, they turned down an NIT bid. UNC, they turned down an NIT bid. Give me some thoughts on that.
I just asked Gary, my father, Gary Budish, about this because I said to him one time, if UCLA would have made the tournament, he goes, we would have turned down an NIT bid. I think that is selfish. For many reasons. I think that you're denying players a chance to play in the postseason to keep going, to get, you know what, like I get it, like you're UNC, you're, you know, VCU, I don't, you know, or like.
No,
you're,
no, Dayton. Dayton's the one who lost.
Sorry, Dayton's even worse. But like, If you're a blue blood program, maybe it's a little bit more understandable, but not really, because like I equate it, I'm a big soccer fan, as you know, right? Like if you play in the
Right.
Champions League, that's the biggest competition in Europe, but there's also the Europa League, which is the league below it. If you win the Europa League, you get an automatic bid to the Champions League. I know that doesn't happen here, but
Right.
I've still more basketball for these kids to play, more exposure, more, you know, if you're a kid that's trying to play in Europe or even like make a low-end NBA draft player, why wouldn't you want to play as many games as possible? So no, I don't like when teams turn down bids for that because I think you were not good enough to make the tournament. That sucks. UNC, you're embarrassed because you didn't make the tournament this year, but why not give your kids, your younger players, even if you just play freshmen, give them some more postseason experience. I never understand that.
Yeah, UNC, honestly, UNC, I understand because this is a team that was up 15 at halftime of the championship game last year and blew it. And it seems like that stench continued throughout the entire season, even though they started off ranked number one. So, I mean, I think that, honestly, I hate to say it, that tournament's below them. But for a team like Dayton, it didn't make any sense. I mean, with Dayton, I mean, I only know about this from seeing them play on Sunday. They got this kid from Arizona Conference Prep, which is one of these, you know, like basketball school that's turning into a national power, right in my old stomping grounds there in Chandler. They got this kid, I think it's Richard Holmes the second. This kid is 6'10. He's a rim runner. Oh, he had like 28 points in the game. This kid, oh my goodness, can this kid play? I don't know if he'll make the NBA, but just watching this kid, he was dominant. He was grabbing rebounds. He could even hit his free throws too. So I would think that, like you said, a team like that, who's, you know, they're not a major, but I don't know if they're a mid-major. They're somewhere kind of in between. They'd want to at least keep playing. And I think if you ask some old school coaches, you know, they'd say, all right, I want to keep developing the players. And one more thing with this theme. If you're a college basketball fan, you know, situated, I don't know, let's just say between New York and Philadelphia, ties both into this year. The amount of conference tournaments that were in this region last week, you had the Ivy League in Princeton, you had the Metro Atlantic Conference. That's why I want to bring this up, because I'm going to ask you about Iona, Patino, and St.
Oh, yeah.
John's maybe. You had them in, down in Atlantic City. You had the Atlantic 10 in Barclays. You had the Big East at Madison Square Garden. I mean, just goes to show you there's talent everywhere.
Sure.
And it's a cool time if you ever get it, you, anyone else ever gets a chance to go to some of these smaller tournaments. You pay like barely anything. You sit wherever you want. And, you know, just a lot of fun. But with Iona, are people into Iona there in Westchester County, New York, where you are?
Oh yeah, they love them because a buddy of mine is the assistant coach at Iona Prep, so they're a big
Oh,
school
okay.
for it. So yeah, no, they're super into Iona here, and good old Ricky P.
Is he going to take the St. John's job no matter what? Is that
I
the
think
feel
so.
around town?
I think he's got to try and rebuild that tarnished legacy. How could you not?
Now, would he have to move houses? This is my last question to you. I haven't driven from Westchester to Queens. I don't know anything. I don't know much about Westchester other than Stu Leonard's right off the New York State Thruway.
Oh God, it
You
is
know,
the
being a Long
best.
Island guy, but
It's
yes,
the best
Leonard's
food in the world.
is good.
I just
Good
drove
stuff
down to
there.
Queens. I just drove down to Queens last week. I got there in 27 minutes from Westchester, so I don't think
Okay,
so.
so if Patino's leaving at the right time, he doesn't have to move houses.
Yeah, traffic's all right. And you know, plus with these interest rates, you don't want to move houses right now.
Right, Buddhist, let's end it on that. Thank you for jumping on the Schloss Rant Sports Podcast. Can I get a bear down Arizona before we go?
Bear down Arizona, 2022, 2023, Final Four appearance. Mark it on the books.
They're winning the whole thing. That's all I got to say. All
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Brutus. Thanks again.
All right, Schloss.
Please.